on a single string of a person bound to their promise hangs everything from nuclear disarmament to a family reunion, from a successful revolution to a return ticket from Pasadena. The actions of the world hang or fall because of a person bound to their promise. Or so surmised the author and theologian G.K. Chesterton. Spend a moment with that the words and especially the deeds of our lives are suspended, hanging on that single string. It doesn't take much to come close to Mary in our gospel passage this morning. She and her sister Martha had been agonizing over their brother Lazarus in his sickness. He was rapidly declining, enough so that in their growing desperation, they sent word for their teacher Jesus, who was a couple of days' travel away from Bethany, that he should come, and should come quickly as their brother was ill and near death. And so they waited. And they waited, caring for Lazarus as he was slipping away and watching the road for the one who could heal like none other. Did their message even get to him? Had he heard? Didn't he care? Apparently not. For before Jesus had arrived, their brother Lazarus was dead. And you might imagine then their mixed emotions when they finally hear that Jesus was now close by, just up the road from Bethany. And my guess is that for them there might have been some relief, but that it was also joined with pain, with disappointment, with grief, and maybe even with anger at Jesus' absence. All these emotions, building, competing, surging, bound up together as Jesus slowly, ever so slowly, makes his way to their home. So it's not surprising in the verses just before our passage this morning that we hear Martha hurrying to meet Jesus before he even reaches the village. And I wonder if her words just almost spilled out. These words on the road being the very same words that we heard from her sister Mary. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. If you had been here, if you had been here, it's not too far of a distance from if you had been here to where were you, Lord? Where were you? It's this phrase, where were you, that I think many of us can now enter into this story with Mary and with Martha. Where were you, Lord? It's a lament that they share with countless across the ages. And I believe that many of us have been there, wondering in our time of sorrow, not being able to comprehend what is taking place, where God might be hiding. We've heard it a lot these last few weeks from the book of Job, and most especially in last week's reading from Job and in Liz's response to it. When we use these words, where were you, Lord? Where are you, Lord? It's as if something within us has been fractured, fragmented, broken. It's as if we, like Mary, are kneeling, maybe even weeping at the feet of Jesus and asking him, where were you? Why wasn't this part of your promise? So this last week I've been contemplating what it means to make a promise. If G.K. Chesterton is right, and these promises are the string upon which hangs the well-being of the world, I wonder why and how we make them, how we hold and keep them. The 20th century ethicist Lewis Smedes believes promises to be essential to our common life. Human destiny, he writes, rests on a promise freely given and reliably remembered. Besides providing a believing basis for hope, this means that whenever you and I make and keep a promise, we are as close to being like God as we ever can be. When you say to anyone that you will be there with her, you are only a millimeter beneath the angels. In a way, it's as if the vows of our past, broken and whole, stretch out behind us. And the promises that we have yet to fulfill stretch out before us. Now, I must say that forgiveness is essential to heal and make whole that which has been broken. And that a promise is vital if we are going to make order in an unpredictable future and world in which we live. But that we, you and I, we constantly live in that hinge, in this present, trying to heal and be healed and to make promises for what we hope to come. Now, like many of you, I've made quite a number of promises in my life. Many of them I have kept. Some of them I have broken. Some of them were not promises that really were mine to make. Others, I am glad to say, that I have let go of. Some of these promises have been made with friends so that there will be others with me to hold me accountable. Other promises I have made only to myself and my Maker. And then there are the promises that I have made that take a very particular form, those of vows. I have taken vows of marriage to have and to hold for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish until we are parted by death. And my belief is that this solemn vow expanded as Sarah and I were blessed with our children, Benjamin and Jonah. Because they have become part of these promises of love. I also made promises when I was ordained a priest. I took vows to be a faithful pastor, a diligent student of the Scriptures, a minister of the reconciling love of Christ. I took vows to pattern my life in accordance with the teachings of Jesus, to be guided by my bishop, and, as I have said, not altogether, but sometimes, because of that vow, I've taken a vow to persevere in prayer. And every year during Holy Week, I renew these vows with our bishop and our priests and the deacons of this diocese, because I need to remember the promises that I made, that I continue to make. But even these promises, as formative as they have been as a priest, as a husband, as a father, these promises were preceded. They are actually founded on another set of vows that were taken for me at a young age. You see, I have a memory trace of my first public promises of my life made at my baptism. Besides the brown sports coat and very wide tie that I was wearing, I remember being in front of the church with my younger sister, with aunts and uncles, as promises were made about my life and the way it would be lived. These are the same promises that we will hear today in our baptismal covenant, the same vows that in a few moments a member of our parish, Oya Erez, will be making. Oya, who is new to this Christian way, is going to be baptized in a few moments. And the promises that she makes will shape her life for years to come, just as the promises that we have made and the promises that those who love us have made on our behalf, they have shaped us. And by taking on these vows, she is very publicly promising to continue in the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to persevere in resisting evil, to proclaim the good news by word and example, to seek and serve Christ in all persons, and to strive for justice and peace. Oh yeah, these are very big promises. But you do not do this alone. Right? We never, as Christians, we never do this alone. And that is why today we will join with Olya, just as we have promised to join with all who have been baptized into this faith, into this place before. Right? I will ask this question of you. Will you who witness these vows do all in your power to support this person in her life in Christ? And your answer will be, we will. One more time. Will you who witness these vows do all in your power to support this person in her life in Christ?
We will.
Right? Now that's a really big promise. Right? It doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to know what can happen in this world. What can happen in this walk? But we do not make this promise alone. And we need reminders. And one of the ways that I'm reminded of this on a day like this is through a symbol that is present at every baptism, a Paschal candle. Besides being just a honking big candle, the Paschal candle, Paschal is Greek for the Passover. From death into life. For us as Christians, it represents Christ passing over from death into life, and it serves as a sign of promise, one that we light at our Easter vigil, and we burn through the Easter season, and then whenever we gather as a body to baptize and to bury. For at each of these times, it is essential that we remind ourselves of the promise that God has made to us, the created, that death will not have the final word. It's also why it can be so imperative for us to baptize and to light this fire on this day, on the feast for all saints and all souls. For the 3 days, right, the Triduum of Halloween, All Saints and All Souls, they formed their own hinge in and of themselves of life and death and life again. And whenever we come close to death, it is so important to hear our sacred stories, especially this one with Mary and Jesus and Lazarus. Because one biblical scholar, Caroline Lewis, has called this gospel passage today a story of the if-onlys. Right? In our text, you can almost hear those words in Martha and Mary, in their pleading with Jesus, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. Friends, I believe we need to hear these words at this time of the year when we come close to this thin space, because my sense is that most of us have our own if onlys that have left us wondering, just what does God promise us? If it's not deliverance from grief or heartache or toil or oppression or suffering or death, then what is it? Well, the response from across the ages, from Isaiah and Job to John's gospel and the Revelation, is consistent. That the promise of God is to remain with us. This is what we hear especially this morning from the Revelation, that the dwelling of God is here among mortals. It is true and trustworthy. Not apart from us, not distant and remote, but present within us, closer still to us than the beating of our heart, than the very breath we draw. There needs be no temple in this new Jerusalem, for the dwelling place of all that is rests here within us, around us. Even in the midst of the stench of death, this life remains. It has been done, is happening, shall be. And this is the promise that allows us to make vows, to make any promise that matters to ourselves, to one another, and to the Most High. It is why the vows that Olya will make are so important. Because, friends, if what we see around us in this world, if that's indeed all there is, right, and I mean all of it, right, all that we absorb through the news, all that we see in our own lives and those whom we love, we know all that. We know of the struggle, of the loss, of the decay, of the destruction, ultimately of the finitude. And if that is truly all there is, then why should we bother coming back next week? As Paul of Tarsus says, if this is all there is, then we are most to be pitied. Without the promise that life, creating, forgiving, sustaining life is our beginning and our end, without this promise, as far as I'm concerned, after we leave today, we might as well just keep the doors locked. But that is not our witness, friends. No, this day, when we are surrounded by those who come before and come after us, on this day we gather that our souls may be a witness. Right? This is why we come back day after day, week after week. We return to remember, to lean into this promise that death, no matter how daunting, does not have the final word. We return to make our vows, to respect the dignity of every human being, as trying as that may be, to honor and to keep, to care alike for young and old, strong and weak, rich and poor. We return to make our promises this day and all our days, because no matter what, love remains. This is the string of the cosmos. This is the promise that our God has made, and one that we, friends of God, are to keep.